You're listening to KATN LP 106.9 Salida, Colorado. And this is Truth Quest with Melody. And I've got my guest, Richard Mack. And I want to say the views expressed on this program are those of myself and of my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. And this is Sheriff Richard Mack. I've had him on, we had him on a couple of years ago, I believe. And I've called him and asked him to, or contacted him and asked him to come on the program, particularly after what's taken place with this Arizona shooting. And I welcome you back to the program.
Well, Melody, thank you so much. I really appreciate being on with you, and I hope that we can accomplish a lot in the next hour.
Well, I'm just going to kind of let you go with where you'd like to go with this and kind of give us an update on what you know and what your opinion of what took place in Arizona and your connections with the judge role, and go from there.
All right. Well, I think the most glaring result of what happened is the sheriff's response to the whole thing. Sheriff Dubnyk is a former colleague of mine. I know him pretty well. He was never too involved with the other sheriffs. He hardly ever came to any of the meetings that we had. Like the sheriffs in the state would meet together every quarter, every 3 months, and discuss mutual problems and mutual concerns and see what we could do about working together to combat crime and other issues. He didn't participate too much. I do remember being at his office a few times, but I'm really astonished, if not absolutely taken aback, by the unprofessional and irresponsible manner that he conducted himself following just a few hours after this, probably the worst crime in Arizona history. Certainly the worst crime in Pima County history, which is the Tucson area. And for him to start playing the blame game instead of concentrating on the management of this horrific offense and to start such divisive talk and to alienate and single out Tea Party constituents of his is absolutely unimaginable.
Do you have anything
to... This is the time for leadership. This is the time to bring the community together. And even though Barack Obama attempted to do that when he went to University of Arizona for the, quote, memorial service, unquote, you know, I've been to a lot of memorial services for a lot of different churches. And that was no memorial service. It got turned into a political rally. And Barack Obama should have just put his hand up and said, you know, let's remember what we're doing here. I know this is a basketball arena, but let's remember what we're doing here. We're here to honor people who were taken from this earth way before their time. A little angel by the name of Christina Green was viciously murdered, and we want to respect, pay our respect to her and to her family, learn from her life. And then I'm almost, you know, I don't really get in to conspiracy this and conspiracy that, although our government has a long history of lying to us, covering up evidence about the crimes that they are involved with. And, for instance, the JFK assassination. The Warren Commission report was full of lies, and the obstruction of evidence, or actually a lot of the evidence was put into a time capsule And we get to open it in, I think, another 10 years or so. Why our government plays games like that, and why they lie to us about 9/11, and why they lie to us about Ruby Ridge and Waco and on and on and on, I'm not sure I know. But I'm really kind of confused as to all the different stories and reasons that were given publicly as to why Judge John Roll was even in attendance at a political rally that a federal judge, off duty or on duty, wouldn't make any difference, would attend such a rally.
Is this unusual?
You do not see federal judges do such things. The Supreme Court judges do not go to political rallies. Do they play politics in their decisions? Oh, yes, all the time. In fact, the Supreme Court has been basically turned into a political hit squad. Be that as it may, federal judges don't go to rallies, and yes, I'm sure that Judge Roll had a friendly relationship with Congresswoman Giffords. Fine. Still, you don't really go to support her at a political rally. And so we were told that he just happened by, then we're told that he came by there just to say hi to her, then we're told that he was shopping at Safeway and came out and was there. And the whole story goes like this. Haven't you, you've heard the story, right, that Judge John Roll had been murdered.
Right.
And, okay, that part's true. We know that. But it was almost like, okay, Congresswoman Giffords was shot, she looks like she's going to make a miraculous recovery. A federal judge was also killed, and five other people. I mean, they don't talk about who Judge Roll is. They don't talk about what cases he was just recently considering. They don't talk how constitutional he has been. They don't talk about how patriotic he has been. I want to know what he was involved with. I want to know who he was. And they just say his name, that one of the highest-ranking judges, if not the highest-ranking judge in Arizona, was just murdered. And it's just kind of a little side story. Not even that. They kind of just pass over it.
Well, I'm kind of curious as to why we heard about the little girl, but we don't hear about the other people that were.
And yeah, that too. I want to know each one of them. I want to know who they were. I want to know what they stood for. I want to know how devastating this was to their families. And anyone could imagine losing a 9-year-old little precious angel. But these other people, too, were precious to their families. And it turns out that the Green family didn't even go to the memorial service. And I'd like to know why that was the case. And I think that we need to really pay attention to these people. And Mr. Green talking about how he didn't want his daughter's life exploited for more legislation. And nobody's listening to that. And certainly the mainstream media isn't addressing that issue. But I can tell you a lot more about Judge Roll. And an article that I wrote about him is on my website and is on
and your website?
Other websites now. And it's been in a couple of major newspapers. And it looks like there's going to be some other newspapers running with my article about Judge Roll being a true American hero.
Okay, and your website is?
SheriffMac.com. Mm-hmm. And I need to tell you, Melody, he's mentioned in every one of my books. His fingerprints are all over my books and all over my entire crusade. And if it hadn't been for Judge John Roll, I wouldn't be speaking with you now. And I would have never made it to the United States Supreme Court on the lawsuit that I filed. And the federal government went after me, and they went after every possible technicality to keep me away from even being able to file this lawsuit. They attacked me on standing, and the local commissioners here were siding with them. And I had no support until the governor at the time, Governor Symington, came out and supported me in what I was doing. But Judge Rohl stood behind me every step of the way. He would not allow Janet Reno to attack me on standing, and he said that was ridiculous. I sought an injunction or an order of protection from my own government from being able to arrest me while we were doing this. He sided with me once again. And then in the ruling, and actually in the courtroom, he sided with me there. And the lawyer for the federal government started to lie and misrepresent the truth on some statistics that she presented. And he didn't care about the statistics. And I'm sitting there wondering about how she could lie so much in court. And the judge, again, Judge John Rohl, rebuked her and told her that, counselor, do not try to pretend in this courtroom that your statistical analysis somehow equates to constitutionality.
So are you
and
trying...
That's probably the strongest thing I've ever heard from a judge in my life. And we hear now so many times that the Constitution is not respected by judges. And we've seen this recently by Judge Bolton in Arizona when she didn't respect the Constitution whatsoever in her ruling against SB 1070 here in Arizona. And I'm not saying whether or not the law is constitutional. I'm saying that her actions in court were entirely unconstitutional. She didn't go by the Constitution. The Constitution in Article 3 says that in such matters of the state fighting the federal government, that the United States Supreme Court has original jurisdiction. She didn't care about that. And anyway, it was amazing to see personal experience, a judge who is truly committed to his oath of office to defend the Constitution. And then in his ruling, and this is on page 19 of my book, From My Cold Dead Fingers, Why America Needs Guns, he actually said that Congress exceeded its authority under Article 1, Section 8 of the United States Constitution, thereby impermissibly encroaching upon the powers retained by the states pursuant to the 10th Amendment. And then he also said that it was unconstitutionally vague under the 5th Amendment. And he is the only judge, including the Supreme Court or all other circuit judges and all other district court judges, he is the only judge that heard this case of the dozens and dozens of judges that heard the sheriff's cases, and there were seven total sheriffs that filed this case. He is the only one that ruled that it was also a violation of the Fifth Amendment, not just the Tenth. And this was a very principled man, a very religious man, a very patriotic man. And yes, he made some mistakes on a couple of cases in his career, but I made a couple of mistakes while I was sheriff, and I wish I had been a lot tougher than I was, looking back.
So are you alluding that there may be more than just a coincidence that he was there or something happened to him? Is that what you're kind of saying or not?
Your sound is coming in and out. Yeah, do that again.
Are you alluding that it possibly that this might have been more than a coincidence with this happening with the judge or not?
I'm very suspicious about it. It just looked way too coincidental. And in law enforcement, you know, after you see, you know, you can see two or three coincidences, but after you see 10 or 15, you know that maybe the investigation should go another direction. What I'm saying is that we don't know the whole story yet, and the investigation should be more of what Sheriff Dubnyk pays attention to instead of getting involved in the political rhetoric. Something he already admitted on Wolf Blitzer show, that he has no evidence to support what he's saying whatsoever, that he's just making an opinion because of his 52 years of law enforcement. Well, that 52 years of law enforcement should be put towards finding what's going on and bringing the community together. I want my concerns and questions answered. Just like I said, in other investigations of horrible crimes that this country has suffered through, we were always lied to by the government, and usually being told it's for your own good. And you know, I'm sick and tired of that. And here again, another horrific assassination, and we are once again asking questions. And I just don't trust this. And I just want the answers.
Right, but
I can tell you is that this man's life has been skipped over so routinely by the national press and mainstream press that I just don't trust it. I don't like it, and I don't trust it.
I mean, this is another instance where more than likely we won't get any answers either. I mean, if it's like all the other type of assassinations that have taken place or major horrific events that we've had in our country, it seems like, you know, all they do is create questions and we never really get any concrete answers. Or if they put someone to death, then we come to find out later down the road that there's real questions of the people that were put to death or put in prison were, you know, the ones that were really the culprits.
Yeah. Well, and I would like to see, for once, quick justice in America. This lunatic coward that committed these crimes will be flaunting this for the next 2 or 3 decades, and I just say that's justice delayed is justice denied, and this whole system in America is backwards. And as you know, I've written extensively about the powers and responsibilities of the sheriffs in this country to take stronger stands against the tyranny that we are facing, especially from the federal government. My books are dedicated to the principle that the greatest threat to our God-given American liberties are coming from our own federal government. And there has to be an answer to this. And the one thing I know for certain is that answer is not in Washington, D.C. And so where do we look for peace, safety, protection, and freedom in these days where our government has become so mafioso and so corrupt? Where do we turn? Where can the people turn for peace, safety, freedom, and protection? And that answer, my dear friends, is in your own county. It's in your own backyards. It's the very person who promised you when he took his job as county sheriff that he would uphold and defend the United States Constitution.
You might back off just a little bit from your telephone because it's kind of distorting too. So, can you hear me?
How's that?
Okay, much better. Okay.
So I, you know, this was a horrific event. I would ask the sheriff, why is it that in a county that is, or in a town that has had its more than fair share of crime, especially associated with the border violence, a city that is 60 miles north of Mexico, and a congresswoman who was barely elected and was involved in quite a heated re-election campaign, and she's out in public, and your agency provides no security. And then I want to know, why is it, and what do you expect people to do when your response time was about seven or eight minutes to get a deputy at the scene? If indeed, as you have said, that you don't believe citizens should be armed, and other lawmakers who don't believe that citizens should be armed, what do you expect citizens to do until the police arrive? During these incidents or similar incidents or any kind of home invasion, what do you expect a citizen to do when the response time to for a police to get there and supposedly help them takes 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes? Most of the shootings are over, as this one was, in about 35 seconds. So do we really expect citizens to throw rocks or grab their pitchforks when they are being invaded by ruthless thugs? We saw what happens when a ruthless, coward maniac just starts shooting people. When the citizens are not armed, one man can control an entire crowd. We've seen this time and time again, and yet we still have more calls for gun control now because of this incident and others. And why is it that if we look through history, we see that the most heinous gun control advocate was Adolf Hitler? Why is it that we have politicians today in America who want to pretend that gun control will provide some sort of benefit here in America? How is it that we have leaders who believe they're smarter than the founding fathers, and yet they want to convince each of us that there's some sort of magical system for gun control in America? It won't be used like Hitler used it. It won't be used like Stalin used it. It won't be used like Mexico uses it right now. It won't be used like Fidel Castro uses it in Cuba. It'll provide peace and safety here somehow. This is an absolute ruse. It is propaganda, and gun control, my dear friends in Washington, D.C., you lying, corrupt politicians, gun control is against the law in America. Even if you were able to prove it would provide some sort of benefit, it is still against the law. And one of the things that I really appreciate from my decision in the Mack Prince case, Justice Scalia says, the weighing of the burdens or benefits in any law is not necessary. If it doesn't fit the Constitution, it is incompatible with our constitutional system of dual sovereignty. And the only muster that any law must meet is, does it pass the Constitution? Is it in line with our Bill of Rights? And the reason the Founding Fathers put the Second Amendment in the list of untouchables, the list of inviolables, otherwise known as the Bill of Rights, was it was put in there as number two because it protects all the others. And, man, that's something that I learned as a peace officer a long time ago. And I'll tell you, Melody, I am not a hunter. I've never really been a gun enthusiast, and I'm still not. I like to go shooting. I like to take my family shooting. But I've never been deer hunting in my life. I don't have a moral problem with hunting. I just have, it's something that I've never been interested in doing. My dad was not a hunter, and I didn't grow up around guns. And quite frankly, when I started my police career, I was kind of afraid to shoot. It was something I just simply was not used to doing. And so it took me a while to get used to shooting, and now I'm pretty good at it, and I do enjoy shooting. But it's all target shooting, and if I ever had to defend my family against criminals or thugs, I certainly would do so. But I thank the good Lord that I've never had to do that. I pray that I never will, and I hope that everyone in this country will come together and support our Constitution as we try to solve the crimes and search for answers for these types of events. I do know that one of the answers is not more gun control. It will not provide any peace, safety, or security. Never has, never will, and I will never support such nonsense.
Are you still involved with Oath Keepers?
Yeah, very much so. I'm on the board of directors.
Okay, and so what are you doing with that, and how's it going for you? I mean, how's it? You know, are you getting a lot of response? And is it growing? Is it pretty much a growing movement? I mean,
it is. I think that they've had a little bit of a. They're not getting nearly as much publicity as they were earlier. When I went to the Oath Keeper National Convention, we actually had a good sheriff from Utah that spoke, Sheriff Mark Gower. CNN was there covering the event, and I was interviewed on CNN. I will tell you that because of Oath Keepers and the movement that I'm involved with, during the last 8 months, I've been interviewed by Univision, which is actually pronounced Univision, and it's a worldwide Spanish channel. I've also been interviewed by BBC, as I said, CNN. I was on Chris Matthews on MSNBC, and I was also just recently interviewed by Australian Broadcast Corporation, ABC, but they are Australian. And they actually came out here to Arizona and spent a day with me. And I would say that there's two things that are still a vital part of the solution to what is now destroying America. I would say that one is the Tea Party movement. I believe that it has been extremely valuable in waking people up. The next one, I would say that Oath Keepers is a vital cog in the wheel to keep the pressure on public officials who have actually sworn an oath that they actually have a responsibility to keep that oath. Isn't it amazing that there's actually public officials who will tell you they do not have to keep their oath of office, that it's a ceremony, and that the Constitution is something that they only have to keep if the legislature tells them to, or if the courts and Supreme Court issue some sort of proclamation that we got to keep our oath of office. Otherwise, they're not going to keep it. And I think that's a national disgrace. And I've been talking about the oath of office. If you look in my book, For My Cold Dead Fingers, the very last chapter is an open letter from myself to all law enforcement officers, to all my brothers and sisters in law enforcement. It's an open letter all about whether or not we will keep our oath of office. It's the only thing important that any public official can and should be doing. We swear an oath, and to not keep an oath after you swear it, I believe, is perjury. It borders on treason to not keep your oath to the Constitution. The reason we take an oath is that the Founding Fathers actually put it in the Constitution. In Article 6, last paragraph of the U.S. Constitution, it requires every public official, both of the United States and in the several states, to swear allegiance to the U.S. Constitution. The founders put that in there because they believe that all three branches of government should have the same purpose, and that is to follow the Constitution. And this was to establish a double security, if not maybe a triple security, to the rights of the people. And there's nothing subversive about following the Constitution, yet there are many groups and media outlets in this country that actually try to promote fear across the country if against anyone that supports the Constitution.
I
think that's a national disgrace.
You might tell the audience the significance of why, you know, sheriff is such, you know, the position it is and why it's, you know, what their duty is. And then are you also, have you run across anything to point out that maybe that they're trying to take out the sheriffs and as a official?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, Hawaii and Alaska, when they formed, never established the office of sheriff. That was a huge mistake. They just have police there. That's it. We might want to remind all your listeners that the only elected law enforcement officer in this country is the county sheriff. The only elected law enforcement officer in your county is the sheriff. Everyone else is a bureaucrat, and that's actually one of the reasons he is the most powerful person in government, especially law enforcement, because he is the only one who represents and answers to the power source, we the people. And then, in taking his position, before he can take the position, he must swear publicly that he will protect, defend, and obey the United States Constitution. So he has actually said, I'll take the position of sheriff, but I will contract with each of you to protect your constitutional rights. And for the sheriff to deny that or to not fulfill that promise is totally disgusting to me. And so anytime anyone comes into the county and commits a violation of the Constitution or oppresses the people or victimizes the people in any manner, the sheriff would have to stand against it. And it matters little. In fact, it matters not at all whether some of those violations might come from federal agents. The sheriff, nevertheless, has the responsibility and the authority to prevent those types of crimes and to stop them. And my goal is to get the sheriffs in this country united in that effort. We must stand together and tell the federal government that we will no longer tolerate their abuse or their tyranny within our counties. No more. It's over. And I'm right now in the middle of attempting to recruit sheriffs who I already know are sympathetic to the Constitution and to the principles of freedom. And we're trying to get about 150 of those together to kick off our Constitutional Sheriff Project and to convert these men to the Constitution and the significance of the oath of office, and women, I should say. There will be women there as well. I've met Sheriff Welch, who's a female sheriff in Pennsylvania, and Sheriff Mims from Fresno. Very good ladies, very good sheriffs, and stand-up people. But also, I need to finish answering your question. There is a movement, especially in the East, to diminish the role of the sheriff, to diminish the power of the sheriff. Connecticut legislature voted the sheriff out. They voted they took a legislative action that they didn't have the authority to do, but they, by legislative action, said there will be no more sheriffs in Connecticut. The sheriffs themselves acquiesced and went along and took some big offers for federal jobs, took the money, and left the people hanging. And if you ask me, they were pretty treasonous in walking away from their jobs the way they did. Joe Arpaio actually went out there and testified before the Connecticut legislature that what they were doing was a huge mistake. But none of the sheriffs in Connecticut did so. And so the legislature said, hey, you know, if the sheriffs are on our side, we might as well get rid of them. and they got rid of them. And Pennsylvania has taken action to diminish the power of the sheriff. And so the sheriffs in Pennsylvania do not have arrest authority and do not do their own investigations. And I think it was the director of the highway patrol there, said if we allowed sheriffs that kind of authority, there would be chaos in this state. Well, about 90% of the states have sheriffs who have arrest authority. In fact, their next-door neighbor in Ohio, all the sheriffs there have arrest authority. They are the lead law enforcement officer in their counties. And you know what? There's no chaos going on in Oklahoma, in Ohio, or Oklahoma, or any place else where the sheriffs have the ultimate police power that they should have. So, yes, there is a movement in the East to do that, but in the West, this has never happened, and it never will happen. And I can't believe that Massachusetts and other Connecticut and other places back there have, in Pennsylvania, have done things to destroy the office of the sheriff. And I don't believe that's an accident either. I don't believe that that's a coincidence. I don't believe that there is, what's the word I want, noble. There is not nobleness in their efforts to do that. I don't believe there's good cause to do it. I believe that it is subversive. I believe it is an attempt to destroy a check and balance system on politicians and on governmental abuse. And they know that they need the sheriff out of the way for the New World Order to take effect in this country. And so, no, I don't think this is a coincidence, and I don't think it's accidental.
You don't
and
think,
I don't trust it a bit.
Have you observed any some of those that are coming in as sheriff coming from a background that may subvert the office in other manners? Have you observed anything like that?
Well, I've observed a lot of sheriffs who don't believe they have to keep their oath of office, and I think that's the scariest thing you could have right there. I think there's other sheriffs that go along with politics, and they're willing to compromise the liberty and freedom of their constituents to play patty cake with politicians.
You've not observed that some of these sheriffs, if I'm not mistaken, that some of them are being corporatized.
Well, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, and a lot of that just is basically militarized, and they're being federalized, and they're actually signing.
So wouldn't that split their allegiance?
Well, of course it does.
Okay. Oh,
absolutely. That's okay. That's one of the huge problems we're talking about, and that they don't keep their oath to the people, and they start playing money games with the federal government and going for the grants and the freebies offered by the feds. And to me, you got to ask a question to all these sheriffs and politicians in the states who are so addicted to federal funding. Where do you think they get the money? The federal government it does not have a business or its own source of money. They do not get this independently. They take it from the people. And then you guys take it as if it's free money, and that they have no moral obligation to find out where the money comes from before they accept it. This is filthy lucre. It's ill-gotten gains. It's money laundering. It's thievery of the highest order. And you know, the only true competitor that the federal government has is the mafia. And sometimes it's hard to tell the difference.
So when they give them some of these large grants, and then they get these departments used to large funds coming in, and then they pull the plug on it, and it kind of gets... then you start seeing them trying to figure out creative ways to start making, you know, filling in the gap where the money used to be. Do you that also that in its own right creates problems? Correct.
Well, of course it does, and even if the grants were on the up and up, it's still the federal government always has strings attached. There's never money given to the states or to local jurisdictions where there are not strings attached. Every single one of them destroys local sovereignty and local autonomy. In order to get the money, you have to promise something in return. That's all there is to it.
Right.
And for the sheriffs to play that money game, oh my goodness. And I've had other sheriffs tell me, and I've had state reps and state senators tell me, Sheriff Mack, if we did what you say, we would lose all federal funding. And do you know what I say to that? Hallelujah. You should be stopping that anyway. And to play the federal government, to play the federal government's little money games, and for you to cower and grovel before them in such a manner to get the money, it's absolutely cowardice on the parts of the states to take that money. The stimulus money, what did it do for us? Arizona took the money, and we raised taxes to boot on top of the stimulus money that we got from Mr. Obama. And yet our state is $850 million in debt. And so, you know, if the federal government's going to come out and save us again, well, look what we've done. We now have a $14.5 trillion debt.
Well,
and I'm not very smart, but I know one thing. We cannot sustain that in this country. It is impossible to sustain that. And your Republicans and your Democrats in Washington, D.C., will continue to raise that ceiling until it crushes us to death.
Now, when you're talking about New World Order, and then you have the fact that, are you aware that, you know, if they would dissolve the sheriffs and that we go into these regions, are you aware of the, you know, the 10 regions that they're ultimately working towards?
I've seen that on a map. I've seen the regional map. I haven't seen it recently, but I've seen that map, yes.
Okay, but if you observe the terminology, it's going on around us in many other aspects. It isn't just that it's necessarily put in a hardened area, I guess, like you would, you know, the boundaries like you have at a state. Because I watch, you know, when you pay your IRS bill, you send it to one region, then they change the region, and you go to another region, and then you have your Council of Governments making these regional divisions, even though they may change the boundaries on those somewhat. That appears to be the direction that they're going. So, and if you read some of the documents, and this is part of some of the people that I do interview that do read these documents and see that it is working in this direction, the sheriff being such an official who has a higher authority is a logical target to take out if there have other designs. And are you observing that or?
It's not one of the things that is on the top of my list. What's on my list is that the sheriffs have to study the Constitution, and they've got to start branching out. What I want the sheriffs to concentrate on is A, B, C, D, and go through the order of getting to some of the X, Y, Z issues, like Agenda 21 and FEMA camps and the United Nations agenda altogether. Whatever, no one can look at what's happening in America and not run smack into the face of the New World Order and the threat it poses to the sovereignty of America. You cannot look at, you cannot honestly study what's going on and research what's going on and not realize that the United Nations is an enemy to America.
Okay.
And so if they get into some of that and see these programs that the United Nations is trying to shove down our throats, right now I think probably the most dangerous propaganda, and it just might come through subtly through pragmatism, and that is this, that the states are subservient to the federal government. That is a lie, but it nevertheless is pragmatically shoved down our throats every day. The next one is that the United States is subservient to the United Nations. That is also a lie, but nevertheless, pragmatically, it is being shoved down our throats every day. And the third one is that there's nothing the local jurisdictions can do to stop any of that. And that's the biggest lie.
What I was bringing up earlier on those regions, and that's all part of the Agenda 21. And so, I mean, I'm not the expert that I know people that can draw up and tell you and cite you what part of the Agenda 21 that these come from, but they are trying to, the areas that I'm talking about are in the regions is how they will go about taking the state's rights and from the people, and then the ability for, you know, certain officials to have the ability to enact their jurisdiction. So, but I'm I usually do is bring on people that could cite this, and I'm not the expert on it. I just know that it's part of the plan. So,
well, and I realize that, and I'm not an expert on that either. But I am an expert about sheriff's authority, and that I do know that they are the answer. They can stop this. Many of them don't have the guts to, and many of them don't want to, and many of them have never studied this out enough to know the difference. But it nevertheless is the truth, and
uh-huh.
They have a responsibility to do this, and so all I'm trying to do is sound the call and say, look, it's time to wake up. It's time to get back to American ideals. It's time to follow the founding fathers. And if we start with the oath of office, which requires anyone, I don't care who you are, from the dog catcher all the way down to the president of the United States, you're all required to take an oath of allegiance to the Constitution. Melody, that is impossible to achieve if you've never read the Constitution.
Right.
So the first responsibility is to take the oath. The second one is to study the Constitution so you can keep your oath. And I believe that as the sheriff starts studying the Constitution, they'll run in smack in the face of some of these other issues that are so dangerous to America, so dangerous to their people. And if you're really going to protect your people, you've got to know what's coming. What are your people facing? What are the real threats to America? What are the threats that are going to destroy our country? We're seeing so many of them come directly from government. And so did not the founding fathers establish a check and balance system so that when the federal government goes too far, that there's a way to constitutionally stop all that? Well, James Madison said it this way: we can safely rely on the disposition of state legislatures to erect barriers against the encroachments of the national authority, end quote. So I don't believe for a moment that the only entity in Arizona is the state legislature to erect those barriers. I don't believe the only entity in what state are you in, California?
No, Colorado.
Colorado? I don't believe the only entity to do that in Colorado is your state legislature. I believe county commissioners, city councils, school boards, all have the same responsibility to stand against the federal government when they go too far. School boards, you ask any school board member across the country, 99.9% of them will say they have to do whatever this federal government tells them. Yet they're elected by, for, and of the people locally, but they don't serve the local people. They do whatever the federal government tells them.
What
happened? And now that's branching out to every governmental entity in the counties and the states all across America.
If they declare martial law, who does the sheriff have still have the same authority as he always had?
Yes, absolutely. Martial law is not in the Constitution. And so, therefore, the sheriff has not sworn an oath to uphold and defend martial law. He has sworn an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution. Martial law is only used in times of war. It's the only time it's ever been used. And it's against the enemy. You know, so, now, martial law is not mentioned in the Constitution. It has no historical backing that it's a proper thing to do. It is a militaristic technique used against the enemy. And so that would be the time for the sheriffs to go, whoa, they must think that they are trying to conquer us. And the sheriff would simply, I think, do something very routine. Just simply tell the federal government, look, we know you guys are really strapped for manpower. We are totally prepared here. I've got things under control. Please go somewhere else. You're not needed here.
I think
that's the first thing you would have to do. Secondly, if they go further, then he's going to have to take some real serious action.
Well, it seems like that we're seeing that a lot of our military troops are being melded in with some of the adjoining countries, you know, like Canada. And so, again, that sheriff should be the one who has authority within his local area. Then.
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just like Katrina when they started confiscating guns. The sheriff should have stopped that. Do you realize what happened in Katrina? Because of the chaos going on, because of the stupid response of government, both locally and nationally, it became so chaotic that local law enforcement said, we better go get guns from people. In such times of chaos, that's when people need their guns the most. And what did government do? Tried to take them away, and actually did so forcibly, and even beat up a 72-year-old grandmother who refused to give up her guns. You see, this is the type of government we're dealing with here, and this is the kind of stupidity that we're dealing with. And you want to see stupid? Just look at the laws being passed by Congress and being promoted by your own president. You can see the absolute epitome and the zenith of stupidity every time you look at what your Congress is doing to you. And it's not hard to see.
Now you
it's
said
all over it.
Now, you said that you had some people, you were doing interviews with people from outside of the country. What made them want to interview you, and what, you know, why do you think they had an interest?
BBC was trying to paint this whole thing, the Tea Party movement, as just simply being a racial response from everyday Americans towards Barack Obama because he's black. That was one of their biggest concerns. I mean, they wanted to know the rest of the story, and they certainly interviewed more people than just me. But their biggest thing was that, look, this is your first black president, and now all of a sudden you have this big Tea Party movement. It's because he's black. And I said, look, I don't care if he's turquoise or pink polka dot. I'm only concerned with his policies. And this is the first time in America that we've had a president tell Americans that We should be at war to stop terrorists, but we will not secure our own borders. I said, you don't see the hypocrisy in that? It is easier for a terrorist to enter America from the Mexican border than it is for you and me to get on an airplane. And I'm sick and tired of that kind of hypocrisy. This is what we get from Barack Obama. He doesn't care, Bush didn't care, Clinton didn't care, that we kill thousands upon thousands of our young people in this country, and yet they won't secure our own borders. You cannot have a war on terror and not secure your borders. We have a right to define our borders, to limit who can come into our country. And our laws are not racially motivated in any way, shape, manner, or form. But there is a standard for immigration into this country. And there are laws. And I'm not a racist or a bigot because I agree that those laws should be upheld and obeyed. And that's another thing Sheriff Dupnik has said, that because of SB 1070, Arizona has become a mecca for bigots and racists. Well, I'll tell you what. Somebody calling me a racist or a bigot is just as offensive as any racial slur you've ever heard being aimed at any minority group in this country. It's extremely offensive. I take offense to it. And I am not a racist, and my parents didn't raise me to be like that. And anybody who knows me knows that, one, I am not violent, and nor do I advocate violence in any way. And two, I am not a racist of any kind. Never have been, never will be.
Well, do you want to give us a few closing comments? And I want to thank you for coming on the program and informing us as to your relationship with Judge Roll and talking a bit about this the Arizona shooting, and then of course about the Oath Keepers and the position of the sheriff.
Well, I think the Oath Keepers has done a tremendous service to America. I think that the sheriffs of this country are the answer. If we're going to keep this movement peaceful, which I pray for every day, that this movement to take back America and to put our Constitution as the supreme law of the land once again, it will be absolutely vital that the sheriffs of this great country, they'll have to be on board the holy cause of liberty. Patrick Henry called it the holy cause of liberty. It is the holy cause of liberty. This is a holy cause. This is a righteous endeavor. Defiance of tyranny is obedience to God. That's a quote from Thomas Jefferson. This is the bottom line question. As we seek for answers, the bottom line question is, will we continue to follow vapid and lying, corrupt politicians, or will we return to the principles as established by our founding fathers? That's the question. The answer is simple. It is in our own neighborhoods. It is in our own homes. It is in our own counties. And if we will stand together, united in this holy cause, we will win. If our sheriffs will do their duty and keep their oaths, we will win. There is an answer, and it is called state sovereignty. If we exercise it, we win.
And your website?
My website is sheriffmack.com. All of my books are there. All of them talk about this great judge, and I'm really honored to have known him, and I thank him and his family for what he has done for me.
And again, I want to thank you for coming on the program and say good night.
Melody, thanks a lot, and good night to you.
Okay.